We're holding on Nun Umud Beis, five lines from the bottom. We mentioned in the Mishnah about the case about that you have different minhagim in different places about whether you're allowed to do malacha Erev Pesach morning. We said Erev Pesach after Chatzos, you're definitely not allowed to. Rashi had said because you're supposed to be busy preparing for the Seder and Shechting Korban Pesach and whatnot. Tosfos had said, Tosfos had brought from the Yerushalmi because at that time is when you're Shechting your Korban Pesach. So in that case, then when you're bringing a Korban, you're also b'malacha. And then the majority of Rishonim hold that therefore that applies even nowadays when you don't have a Korban Pesach. There's Yeshayim that it doesn't. Anyway, so that was as far as after Chatzos, definitely you're also to, but the Machlokes was whether you're allowed to on the morning, not Machlokes, it's different Minhagim, whether you're allowed to do Malacha on the morning of Erev Pesach. Some places yes, some places not. So now the Gemara is going to get into a discussion of Minhagim in general. And the first one of them actually is going to relate to what we were talking about yesterday about not doing malacha on Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov in general, where we said you're the Eini Royah Simin Bracha, but nevertheless, it's not necessarily completely also. In this connection, by the way, so we're going to be talking about there's the matter that it's said in our Mishnah that a person has to follow the chumras of where he came from and where he's traveling to. There's also a concept which we're going to be discussing now in the Gemara called that if people think that something, that if people are noyig and issu in something, you're not allowed to be maturit in their presence. And then you have a lot of discussion and a lot of different opinions among Rishonim about when we say that. I mean, if we said in the Mishnah already that you have to follow the Minhag HaMakom, then when do we say that it's not just so much that you have to follow it, you just can't be maturit in front of them, versus when we say that there are cases, as we're going to go through, where you're actually allowed to tell them flat out that they're usur, that it's mutter. So those are the issues that we're going to be dealing with in our Gemara over here. So the Gemara starts off, Bnei Beishan, the people of Beishan, a city in Eretz Yisrael, Nohug, Deloi Havu Azlan, Mitzur Litzidon, Memale Shabsa. They had the minhag not to travel from Tzur to Tzidon on Erev Shabbos. Tzur and Tzidon are both cities on the coast of Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, they're both in Lebanon. They're both big business centers, or at least they were. So the people of Beishan, so people would regularly travel by boat from one to the other. They're about 20 miles apart. You can easily get there on, you can easily get there and back on one day. But they had the minhag in Beishan that they don't go even, now we learned in Shabbos that you're not allowed to go on a boat within 3 days before Shabbos because we said over there, because you're going to be uncomfortable, you're going to be seasick, you may end up in a situation where you have to be mechal al Shabbos, et cetera, et cetera. Whatever the case, the point is that we said the Gemara had said over there that if you're just going on a day trip, for example, from Tzor to Sidon, then it would be mutter. But the people of Beishan had the minhag not to do that. They would, they used to not even go on a trip on Friday from Tzor to Tzidon. Eventually, also Benayu Kamed Rabbi Yechanan, in a later generation, their children, the children or grandchildren of the original people who came up with that minhag, they came to Rabbi Yechanan with a shayla. They said, Omrloi, Avahosin Efshalahu, Ananloi Efshalon. Our ancestors were able to manage that. They, the economy was good then. They were able to manage without the business, without the buying and selling that they could do in Tzor and in Sidon on Erev Shabbos. Ananloi Efshalon, it's not possible. The economy is bad and we need that extra money. Omrlohu, so Rabbi Yechanan tells them, no, kvar kiblu aveseichem aleihem, your ancestors already accepted this minhag on themselves. Shenema shma b'ni musar avichav al titash teras imecha. As the Pasuk says, listen, my son, to the musar of your father, and don't abandon the Torah of your mother. The Torah of your mother includes also the minhagim that your ancestors accepted. Those are binding on you. And in fact, you have there's even the question: can you even be matur neder? Which is what it seems from the Gemara over here. You can't even be matur neder such a thing because once the ancestor has accepted it on themselves, then it becomes binding for all generations for their children. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings this. This is the basis of when we say that there are places where they have the minhag to do such and such, then that minhag remains binding on their children, at least as long as they're living in that place. If they move to a new place, then maybe not. But then if they accept the minhagim on themselves again, then yeah. I mean, for example, you know, let's say we have Kitnius or Gebrocht or whatever, you know, when Chassidim came to America, then they reaccepted these on themselves and it became binding on us, their children, as long as we're living here. With that said, though, there are distinctions that some of the Rishonim want to make. What the reason behind the minhag was. In this case, it was a minhag mishum siyog. They were doing it as a fence around the din, that the me'ikra din, you're not allowed to go in a ship where it's going to be a long trip, as we learned in Masechta Shabbos. Here it's not. Here it's only a day trip. But they're doing it as a siyog. They're doing it as a geder around the main iser. So that kind of thing is a much stronger thing than, for example, if it had been a minhag, let's say, that their ancestors did because they thought that it was mutter, and they thought that it was aser, and it turns out that it's mutter. That kind of thing. So some of the rishonim say is a much weaker kind of minhag, and then there would be the ability to be matir neder that because it was based on a mistaken assumption in the first place. Another example, Bnei Chizoy, the people of Chizoy, a name of a place that was far away from Bavel, Nagi Demafreshi Chala Me'aruza. They had the minhag to take challah from a dough made out of rice flour, which you don't have to do because only the Chamesh Aminim are Chayev and Challah, which we learned what those are previously on Daf Lamed Hey. So also v'omrali le'Rav Yosef, they came and told Rav Yosef what's going on, that these people are taking challah where they don't need to. Amar lahu, so he says to them, nechla zor ba'apayu. In that case, a zor should eat it in their presence. A non-kohen should take a piece of this challah that they separated from rice flour and from rice dough and eat it in their presence and demonstrate to them that way that it's not actually considered challah al pi halacha. Esve Abaya, but Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, how could you do that? We learn in a braisa, Dvorim amutorim v'acherim nogu behen iser. When you have something which is actually mutter, but other people are noyig iser in it, as in this case, where it is mutter to eat the dough without taking challah from it, because not one of the chamesh aminim, but some people are noyig iser and they require challah from it, iyata rashoi latiron b'fnehem, then you're not allowed to be mutter such a thing in their presence. So here's where Tosfos draws a distinction between you can have a case where people know that something is mutter, but they choose to be machmer on themselves, then that would be the case that we're saying that iyata rashoi latirun b'fnehem. In this case, they don't even know that it's a mistake. Tosfos also goes on to say that there's a difference between how was this minhag established in the first place. Now, again, in our Mishnah, we said you have to follow the minhag hamakom, implying it's not just a matter of you're not allowed to be matarit in their presence. It's mashma that you actually have to mitzad din follow their minhag. So Tosfos draws a distinction between how was the minhag established in the first place? Were there Tamid Chachamim who established it for them? And then now we're talking about maybe in a later time, as we're going to go on later on the Amud, in a later time, maybe the people in that town are not Tamid Chachamim anymore. And still they keep the minhag because that's what they learned from their ancestors. As opposed to over here, this thing with the rice flour, we're talking about they came up with this idea on their own to take challah from rice flour that they thought you need to. So that would be the difference. So you're not required to keep them in a gamakim. The only question is, can he be matarit in their presence? And Abaya is saying, on the face of it, the Braisa is saying you can't. Amaloi, so Rabbi Yosef answers Abaya, v'lav mi itman Allah. Don't you know there was said about that? It's not so simple, this that we're saying, iyata rashoi latirin b'fneim. He said, Omer of Chister. Rav Chister said this applies specifically b'kusoi. This applies specifically to the kusim. This is back when the kusim were still considered to be Jews, according to the opinion that they were geirei emes. But they were very careless and lax with a lot of mitzvahs. So the Chachamim are concerned that if you matir to them certain things, which they think are osur, then they're going to get more and more careless with mitzvahs, and they're not going to keep anything at all. But well, with regular Jews, you don't necessarily have that issue. So these people are these people in Chozoi are not kusim. So what's the problem? The problem is, the Gemara says, wait a second, kusoi my timer. Now, why is the reason why we would say davka by kusoi, by kusim, that you can't be matir for them something which they thought was also? The reason is, mishum de mesarchi milsa, because they're going to end up sticking one thing to another thing. In other words, they not being bnei Torah, they being amir oretz, and even in a sense worse than amir oretz. Then they are, if you matir one thing to them, then they're going to start saying, oh, well, if this thing is mutter, then that thing is also mutter, when really that thing is completely osur, and the eventual result is going to be that they're going to become careless with many mitzvahs. Well then, hanach inchinami sauchi milsa, don't you have the same problem with these people of Chozoi? They're not tamar chachamim. If you are matter to them, their rice dough without taking challah, they're likely to start thinking, oh, well, then there's no kind of dough that requires challah. And then, of course, you have a problem that they're eating tevel. Now, okay, Chozoi is in chutzlar. It's challah is not daraisa over there, but still, we don't want them to be careless on dinu derabanan either. So still, how can Rabbi Yosef be saying that we should eat that challah in their presence, that not really challah, that piece of the rice dough in their presence? How can we say that? Ela Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says no. Rather chazinan. We have to look at the situation. It depends. Do we treat these people like kusim or not? Will actually depend on another factor. If most of them eat rice, so their regular bread, their regular day-to-day bread is made out of rice, then we shouldn't have a zor eat that in their presence, because it's true, they're not chayev and challah. But on the other hand, they might end up forgetting altogether about the din of challah. They may forget that there is a din that you have to take challah from dough. Since most of their dough is made out of rice, then they're going to forget about the whole concept of taking challah, and then they're going to be over on the issur derabanan, and then they're going to be over on the issur of eating tevel derabanan. On the other hand, the eat ruban dogon achli, but Rav Ashi continues, if most of them eat bread made out of grain, out of one of the chameshes haminim, nechla zor ba'apayu, then when it comes to their rice dough, then a zor should eat it in their presence. Then it's not a matter of we're worried that they're going to forget about challah, because on the other hand, we have there's an opposite consideration that should tell us that we should davka be mevatel their minhag of taking challah from rice, namely duma osila frushi min achiyuv ala potter or min apotter ala chiyuv. Because otherwise, if they think that both grain and rice need to have challah taken from them, they may end up taking from one on behalf of the other. They may have a dough made out of rice and take challah from it on behalf of another dough made out of wheat. And that's no good, because the dough made out of wheat needs challah, is chayiv in challah. The dough made out of rice is not, because not one of the chameshes aminim. And therefore, you're going to have a bigger problem, therefore, you're going to have that they are actually eating tevel. So it's one thing if most of their bread is made out of rice, then okay, then we don't want them to forget about challah altogether. So we'll take our chances with the possibility that they might end up taking from the potter, from the rice, on the minority of dough of grain that they eat. But if you have that what they eat is a majority grain, then we don't want to take the chance that they might take min potter ala chiyuv. And therefore we should do like Rabbi Yosef says, and eat it in their presence and demonstrate to them that it's not actually that it's not actually challah. Okay. So that's another factor. That's another case where we say so far what we have is, you have cases where you do have to follow. You have cases where people have a minhag and they're required to follow it, because the minhag that was started by their ancestors, and that was started, as we said, mishum siyog, that was as a fence around something in the Torah. On the other hand, here we have this minhag over here, and again, Tosfos says, if this minhag over here about the rice, if it had been established for them by Chachamim, then we would be more respectful of it, because we would say, okay, maybe the Chachamim of their times decided that they needed to do it in order to prevent them from forgetting the mitzvah of challah. However, we can see that it wouldn't have been the kind of thing that was made by Chachamim, because on the other hand, you have the flaw in it that they may start thinking that rice and grain are both chayev in challah and take from one on behalf of the other. So it must be that this is a minhag they came up with on their own, where they actually think that it's osur, and where they actually think it's osur and really it's mutter, as opposed to the case where they know that it's mutter and they just want to be machmer on themselves. So therefore, we're saying that we don't have to respect such a minhag. On the other hand, maybe we shouldn't be mevatel the minhag in their presence, because we want to avoid bigger problems. We don't want them, and on the one hand, we have the consideration, we don't want them to forget about challah altogether, and on the other hand, we don't want them to think that you can take from rice on behalf of wheat. Gufa, getting back to, we said, Dvorim Amutarim V'Acherim Nogu B'Han Isser, when you have something which is mutter, but there are people in a certain place that treat it as osir, which again, as Tosfos says, means that, it brings from Rabbeinu Nissim, that it means they know that it's mutter, but they want to be machmer on themselves, as opposed to where they mistakenly think that it's osir. You're not allowed to be matter of such a thing in their presence. You yourself don't have to follow that minhag, but at least in front of them, you're not allowed to be over on that minhag. And Omer of Chista Bekusoi, and we said Rav Chista said Bekusoi Askinon. Rav Chista had said specifically that's referring to Kusim, because again, since they're already very lax in a number of mitzvahs, Bechlal, for the most part, they didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. Then if you start being matter some things, it's going to end up being matter a lot of other. They're going to end up being matter for themselves a lot of other things. No, not the tzedukim. The kusim are the ones where they were brought in by Sancheiriv. Why they didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh is basically, I don't know exactly, but there were parts of it they did. They weren't like the tzedukim where they had an official reason maybe not to, but in practice, they didn't believe in most of Torah Shabbat Peh. So therefore, again, they may get careless. As opposed to regular Jews, regular Amei Oretz, we're not so worried about that. So the Gemara says, V'cholei Amalai. So you're telling me that concept doesn't apply to other regular Jews? V'hotanya, but we learn in a brisa some examples where we see that they weren't matir something in the presence of Amei Oretz, even though it is mutter. So we have three examples. V'hotanya, roichtsin shnei achim keachad, two brothers are allowed to bathe together in the same bathhouse or mikveh or what have you. Now, why would there be a havamin or not? Rashi says brothers are always together, and now they're seeing each other undressed. It may lead them to Mishkav Zachar. So do we have to be concerned about that? Al pi halacha, no. But ve'ein roichtsin shnei achan b'kovel, but in a place called Kovel, then they had the minhag, they had the minhag not to, that brothers don't bathe together. Umaisa b'Yehuda v'Hillel bonav shel Ram Gamliel. It happened once with Yehuda and Hillel, the sons of Ram Gamliel. The pashtus, this is Ram Gamliel Hazokin. So I don't know. Actually, we don't know whether it's Ram Gamliel Hazokin or Ram Gamliel the Yavne or one of the later Ram Gamliels. I did see something once suggesting that this is actually Ram Gamliel, the son of Rebbe, in which case Yehuda is his successor, Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, and Hillel is a brother of his. But I don't know. I don't know how they know that for sure. But okay. Anyway. So these two should rochtsu shneim ke'echa b'kovel. One time they visited Kovel. They bathed together in the local bathhouse, not knowing that the local minhag is to say that it's osur. The laws are alein kol medina, and the whole country, the whole city was talking about them and gossiping about them. Amru, they were saying miyameinu lo ra'inu kach. We never saw anybody do such a thing. How could these people be doing that? So v'nishmat Hillel v'yotzel b'ayis achitzin. Hillel then just left. He excused himself and went out to the outer chamber of the bathhouse. So he's not in the same area as his brother. I guess he waited his turn. V'loyrotzu loymelahen mutoranatim. He didn't want to tell them flat out it's mutter. Now the people of Kovel are not kusim, and you still see that Hillel doesn't want to be matu in their presence something which they thought is osur. And a second example, Yotzin b'kurd kisun b'Shabbos, you're allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing kurd kisun, which are a kind of very wide slippers. We're not concerned that they may fall off in Rosh Hashanah Abim and then you're going to carry them. We learned in Masechta Shabbos a whole bunch of things that Midrabanim are not allowed to wear on Shabbos because they may fall in Rosh Hashanah Abim because they may fall off and you're going to carry them. Kurd kisun, we're saying, are not in that category. You are allowed to. But the Ein Yotzin b'Kurd Kisun b'Shabbos b'Biri, but in Biri, in the name of a certain city, the local minhag was not to go out with Kurd Kisun on Shabbos. And again, Umaisi b'Yehuda v'Hillel Bonav Shem Gamliel, it happened with Yehuda and Hillel, the sons of Rem Gamliel, Sheyotzin b'Kurd Kisun b'Shabbos, they went out wearing such slippers on Shabbos b'Biri, in Biri, not knowing that the local minhag is to say it's also. The laws are Alein Medina, and the whole country, city, really Medina over here means like the city. So the whole city was talking badly about them. The Omru, and they were saying, "Miyameinu lo ra'inu kach." We never in our whole lives saw anybody do such a thing. The shumtum v'nosnun la'avdehem. So they took off the slippers and gave them to their servants to take home. V'lo rotzu lo melahen mutar and atem. They didn't want to tell them it's mutar. Now, what good does it do to give them to the servants? Eved Knani has to keep Shabbos as well. So there's two possibilities. One is that we don't mean actual servants. We mean just local goyim that they hired. So in that case, fine. It's only a shvus, and it's only a shvus then. The other possibility is maybe these were avodim knanim, but the vote is, given that it's not actually also to wear them, we're saying they're only not going to continue wearing them because that's the minhag hamakom, then they're going to give them to the servants. The servants will wear them home. The servants now are walking around in Kurd Kisun on Shabbos. Big deal. Since it's not actually usher, then therefore they weren't concerned about that. Yeah, it was very common in those days that an Eved would carry some kind of symbol on his clothing or around his neck or whatever, that he's an Eved. We learned about that in Masechta Shabbos. So yeah, you could tell by the way they were dressed also. Whatever it is, the point is, yeah, people would, and like this, it was only Yehuda and Hillel, who are the sons of the Nasi, that their laws are in Kol Medina. If an average person came over there and then started wearing Kurd Kisun, not necessarily would they object so much. Okay, anyway. Yeah, but on the other hand, they didn't. They the local minhag hamakom, yeah. Okay. And a third example, the Yoshvin al Safsalei Nochrim b'Shabbos, you're allowed to sit on the benches of Goyisha merchants on Shabbos, meaning you have these benches over there where in front of stores or wherever, where they sit and sell merchandise. You're allowed to sit on those benches on Shabbos. We're not concerned of chashad that people are going to think that you're sitting there in order to do business. But in Akoi, the minhag is not to, the local minhag is not to do that. It happened once with Reb Shimon Gamliel, or it says on the side of a here, Reb Gamliel, that he one time sat on such benches in Akoi on Shabbos. The laws are all of Kol Medina, and the whole city was talking about him. We never saw such a thing. Nishmat Agabe Karka. So he removed himself. He like slid off and sat on the ground. He didn't want to tell them it's mutter. So here we have three examples where something is mutter al pi halacha, and it's not. The people in these cities are not kusim. So what's the problem? Tell them flat out that it's mutter. Given Tosfos's definition that we're saying over here, these are things which they know they're mutter, but that's the thing. These are not even things that they know that are mutter and they want to be machmer. It sounds like these are things which they actually think is osur. So why are we not being moderate for them? So the answer is Bnei Medina Sayom Nami. The answer is the people who live near the sea, all these three cities are near the Mediterranean, Kivendele Shchichi, Rabbanan Gabaihu, since Chachamim are not very common in their areas. Most of the Chachamim lived more, lived further inland. Well, they lived in Tveria and in Sipori and in various other places in the Galil, places like Akoi and Kovol and then Biri, which are all on the coast. Yet fewer chachamim getting out there. In those times, those areas were mostly inhabited by goyim, by Greeks and other such goyim. So you had many Jews living there. Kayseri, for example, had a big Jewish community, but you had fewer chachamim living there or visiting there than you did other places. In later times, that changed, by the way. You have, for example, Rabbi Bohu had a big yeshiva in Kayseri, but that was later. That was a couple hundred years. Here we're talking about Rav Gamliel and his sons, Yehuda and Hillel. So we're talking about in the times of the Tanoim, or maybe the very beginning of the time of the Amoraim was Rabbi Bohu, was many years later. This is, well, so these stories that we just mentioned, these three stories are all, yeah, well, you know, it's possible some of them conceivably could have been. I mean, you know, again, the Gemara is not specifying who the Rav Gamliel is in these three stories. It could have been Rav Gamliel HaZaken, and in that case, his children would still be living at the time of the Beis Hamikdash. But it's more logical to assume. I mean, in the first generations of the Nasius, it goes back and forth. You have Reb Shimon, Reb Gamliel, Reb Shimon, Reb Gamliel, Reb Shimon. The first Yehuda you find in the family is Reb Yehuda Hanasi. So it's more logical to assume that maybe that's the reason why they assume that the Yehuda and Hillel we're talking about over here are the sons of Reb Gamliel, the son of Rebbe, because that's the first time when we find a Gamliel who has a son Yehuda. But we don't know for sure. If that's the case, then yeah, it was well after the Churban. Whatever the case, the point is, since there are not as many Chachamim in those area, Kikusim Damu, so therefore we consider them like Kusim. It's not a Makom Torah, so therefore you have the same problem that if you matter one thing for them, they may come to be matter other things. And that's the vote. In other words, that's why they didn't want to tell them flat out that it's Mutter. So one idea is, in other words, they may have known that the minhag hamakom is not like that. So they would have figured that there's no problem in being over on the minhag hamakom. It's not like we said in the Mishnah that you have to keep the minhag hamakom because as Tosfos says, that would only apply to a minhag choshuv that was made by chachamim. Not necessarily were these takonis made by the law. It's possible. One possibility is there were local chachamim over there who made these things as a geder for various halachas, as we're going to talk about soon. So if that's the case, then that would be more reason to respect them. But the another possibility is they may have come up with it on their own, and therefore you're not obligated to follow them. But once laws are lam kolam adina, once everybody is talking about it, then already they realize then we have a situation like the kursim over here, and we don't want to be matter it for them because they may come to be matter other things. So the Gemara asks, okay, so now let's figure out what the reason behind these three things was. Why is it that in Kovel they don't want two brothers to bathe together? Why is it that in Biri they don't want you to be wearing kur dekisin on Shabbos and so forth? So b'shlemes safsalei nochrim, let's start with the last one. We can understand not sitting on the benches that the goyim sit on, you don't want mishum de mechzik kemeko chamemker, because it looks like you're sitting there to do business, and therefore in Akoi they decided that that's no good, and therefore they answered it. B'kur de kisunami, when it comes to the slippers, we can understand why in Biri they don't want you to be wearing it. Duma mishtalfin, because they may fall off. But osila isiyunu alba amas b'shusarabim, you may end up carrying them 4 amas in b'shusarabim, so therefore they made a siog for it. First of all, there's not necessarily glass in those days, but if there's mud, okay, lots of people, it was common enough that people went barefoot in those days, that if your slippers fell off, not necessarily would you dafka have to put them back on. You might for later on, but you might walk a little bit first while holding them and then put them on in a little bit. Fakert, what if you're standing in a muddy area? You don't want to put them down right there, and because then they're just going to sink into the mud. So whatever the case, you might carry it 4 amas in Rosh Hashanah and only later put it back on. Yeah, maybe. Ella ruchts in my time alloy. What's the problem with two brothers bathing together? So the answer is kedetanya, like we learn in a brisa. Imakol Odom Reich. It's a man is allowed to bathe in a bathhouse with anybody, chutz me oviv, except for his father, v'chomiv, and his father-in-law, uval imai, his mother's husband, his stepfather, uval achosai, and his brother-in-law, his sister's husband. Now Rashi explains the vort is with all of those you have a problem of hirhur. When he sees his father undressed, it reminds him that it brings to mind I came from there, and therefore it causes hirhur. And the same thing with his father-in-law. It makes him think of my wife came from there. With his baal achosai, also it causes him to think about his sister, and it causes hirhur. Rebbe, we'll talk about in a second. Hold on a second. Rabbi Yehuda says it is mutter for a man to bathe together with his father because of the covet of his father, because he'll be helping him in the bathhouse. And the same thing would apply to his mother's husband. So now that's all me'ikar adin. So by the way, though, now you're mentioning a Rebbe. So it's like this. Rashi is explaining that all of the ones we mentioned so far is all because of hirhur. On the other hand, the Meiri says that, yeah, he says that with a father, the reason is more because of covet. It's not for covet, Dick, to see his father undressed. But on the other hand, then in that case, the Gemara is going to soon point out about a Rebbe where it's a difference whether he's helping him out or not, where then it would be mutter. Here, the Gemara is making no such distinction, which would be a reason why Rashi might be saying that it's not a matter of covet for his father. It's a matter of hirhur, and then it doesn't matter if he's being mashamash him or not. Okay. So, but also inu v'gozer b'shnei achen mishum baal achosai. Now, what they did is in Kovel, they made a gzera, now that two brothers shouldn't bathe together because that is somewhat similar to a man and his brother-in-law. So therefore, just like we're saying, baal achosai is also me'ikir adin, so they came up with the idea that two brothers is somewhat similar. So, as Rashi said earlier on the Amud, it's a matter of hirhur, but a different kind of hirhur, it can lead to mishkav zachar. So Yehuda and Hillel didn't want to tell them that it's Osir, because again, we said that these people, they're not Bnei Torah, and if you matter one thing for them, they're likely to be matter another, and therefore they would rather just avoid the issue and say, fine, I'll leave the bathhouse, yeah. Okay, Tana, we learn in a Braise in this connection, Talmud lo yuchatzim rabbi, a Talmud should not bathe together with his Rebbe, because he has to have respect for his Rebbe, and he can't have respect if he sees him undressed. For the same reason, by the way, you have the din that nobody's allowed to see a Melech Yisrael undressed, because you have to have motive for him. Same tells Malach a Melech, Shatei Moser Alacha, and if you see him undressed, then you're not going to have that. The im rabbi tzorich loy, but if his Rebbe needs him to help him bathe, to help him scrub himself or whatever, mutter, then it would be mutter. Now, what is the actual din nowadays? L'maisa, we see everybody goes to the mikveh nowadays and doesn't have an issue with it. The Maram Chalava says over here that one possibility is that maybe it's not an issue. Maybe it's only an issue when you're talking, for example, let's say a shvitzbod or something like that, where people are sitting for a while not doing anything and they're sitting there undressed. Even nowadays in the shvitzbods, they're not, because they cover themselves with a towel. As opposed to, for example, when you're going into a mikveh or into a pool or whatever, then you're most of the time you're covered in the water. So therefore, there's not as much of an issue of hirhur. So there's that. There are more rights in Shulchan Aruch that people are knowing to be makel because usually they're covered in these places. Now that doesn't apply nowadays in the mikvahs. Nobody goes to a mikveh with a bathing suit. That would work, for example, by a swimming pool where you're wearing a bathing suit. But nevertheless, the minhag ha'olam has become to be makel even when you're not wearing anything. Again, one idea might be based on the Maram Chalava that you're not sitting around anyway. Maybe the fact that there are other people there, that doesn't help as far as hirhur. The question isn't that right then and there they're going to go and do something. The problem is that there's going to be hirhur, that lachora. But again, you know, it's fairly quick. You're going in and out. You're not spending a lot of time. So there are poskim who say it's a little bit questionable, this, that we do it nowadays. But they you know, the fact is the olam is noyug to be makel. So they discuss what justifications can be found for it. Yeah, if they only once a year, they don't have to go together. Yeah, I guess that's true. Okay, onward. Yeah. Ki osir rabba babachon. So again, so far, what we see from this last piece is that when you have people in a certain place think that something is osur, then you don't you yourself don't have to keep that minhag, but you're not allowed to be. But if they're kusim or people similar to kusim where there aren't chachamim around in their town, then you have to be machmir in their presence in order that they don't come to be inappropriately makel. But otherwise, you are otherwise. Then we have again, if there was a minhag that was made by a chacham, then it's called a minhag chashuv. Then it's not so simple to be. Then it's not so simple to be matir it. Also, as we said, if it was made for a siyog, like we had with the case of the people of Beishan who wouldn't go from Tzor to Tzidon by boat on Erev Shabbos, then also once the ancestor has accepted it on themselves, then it becomes a chiyuv for their descendants. Okay, so here's another example of following or not following a minhag in other people's presence. Now you have like this. We know that a kosher animal has four stomachs. The fourth stomach is called the cava. It's similar to our stomach. It's where the actual digestion takes place with digestive juices and whatever. That stomach has a layer of fat attached to it. Now you have this. That stomach is shaped a little bit like a letter D. It has a part. It has a side that's curved very sharply, and then you have a side which is curved a little bit less. So it's called, we call it in the Gemara, we call the side that's curved more is called the kesha, it's called kashta, the bow, and the one that's curved less is called yatra, which means the bow string. So as if you imagine it in the shape of a bow with a bow string. The fat on the, so what it is like this, the fat that's on the greater curve, on the bow side is definitely also, that's among the chalev that it says in the Torah, that's also chalev shalakerev, whatever. But then you have, what about the fat on the other side, on the straighter side? So there, in those days, they had different minhagim about it. They had, in Eretz Yisrael, they held that it's mutter and they ate it. And in Bavel, they held that it's osur and they did not eat it. Lamaisa la halacha, it mentions in Shulchan Aruch that we don't eat it. Yesh oimrim because me'ikr adin, based on the people of Bavel. Yesh oimrim only as a chumrah. But nevertheless, either way, we say it's osur. One thing we do though, an interesting thing is in Hilchos Treifos, you have in general we say if there's a puncture in an internal organ of an animal, then usually it makes the animal treifa. If there's chalev tahor, if there's chalev or shuman, which is mutter to eat, that plugs up the hole, then many times it's mutter. We say on the other hand, chalev tamei doesn't work because chalev tamei comes off as a sheet. And therefore, it doesn't really plug the hole effectively, whereas Shuman, Chalev Tahar, is more bunched up, so it can seal the hole effectively. So we say when it comes to this Chalev that's on, when it comes to this fat that's on the smoother side, on the straighter side of the Kaiva, even though we don't eat it, we do say it can plug up a hole if there's a hole in the Kaiva on that side. Because since Bnei Eretz Yisrael actually held that's mutter, then at least for us, even though we follow them in Hagam and Bnei Bavel, we at least have to say that it should be able to plug up a hole. But other than that, we say it's also. We're talking about a capital D. A capital D. Think of like there's a curve and like a bow. You have a curved side and then you have a straighter side. Yeah. Okay. So ki also Rabba Baba Chana, when Rabba Baba Chana came from Eretz Yisrael, Ochol da'ayitra, he ate some of the fat that was on the yeser, some of the fat that's on that straighter side of the kaver. Because that was the minhag where he came from Eretz Yisrael. Ula gabei Rabba Avira Sava v'Rabba Brei de Rav Huna. Rabba Avira Sava and Rabba Brei de Rav Huna came to visit him. Kiven de Chazinu, when he saw them, Kasi Eminaihu, he covered up the fat in their presence. Also v'om, because they're from Bavel, they're Bnei Bavel, and their minhag is not to eat it. Also v'omru leila Abaya, so they came and told Abaya what happened. Omalahu, so he says to them, Shavincho kukusoi, in effect, Rabba Baba Chana has treated you like kusim, in other words, because we're saying that like this, me'ikir adin, he could have told them, it's mutter. Fine, you can't eat it because you're Bnei Bavel, but it is actually mutter, and therefore I'm going to continue eating it. Instead, he didn't. He hid it. So therefore, in effect, he's acting as though you're kusim. Now, how could he do that? How could he treat two amiroyim like this as if they're kusim? The Maharshal says an interesting idea. He says, because these two chachamim, we find in other places in the Gemara, they were very sharp. They were very good at coming up how we show that one din is similar to another din and derive halachas from that. So therefore, Rabba Baba Chana is concerned like this. We're saying with the kusim, the problem is because of amaratzus, they may come to compare one thing to another and to say that one thing thing is mutter when really it's usur, because they're saying one thing is mutter, and therefore with Rav Avira and Rav Bar Rav Huna, you have kind of the opposite problem. Not because of amaratzus, but just the opposite, because there's such outstanding Talmidei Chachamim, and there's such sharp people, they may come to say, if this is mutter, then we can show logically that this other thing is similar to that, and be matter it as well, and therefore you have the same problem. So therefore he didn't want to get into that, and therefore he covered it. So the question is, okay, so that explains why he covered it, why he hid it. But the question is, how is Rav Bar Rav Chana himself bechlal eating from that fat? But Rav Bar Rav Chana lesley hod the tanan noisin olav chumrei amokam sheyotze misham. Doesn't Rav Bar Rav Chana agree with what we said in the Mishnah that you have to follow the minig of the place where you're from and the minig of the place you're coming to? He's from Eretz Yisrael. They're allowed to eat this fat, fine. But he's in Bavel now, where their local minig is to aser it. And this is a minig choshuv. This isn't stam a minig that they came up with because of Amoratzus. The people of Bavel were chachamim. You had many great chachamim in Bavel who asered it for them. So how can he be eating it in the first place? The answer is Amar Abaya Hanimili Bavel Ume Eretz Yisrael La Eretz Yisrael. If you're talking about that you have a person from one place in Bavel visits another place in Bavel, or person from one place in Eretz Yisrael visits another place in Eretz Yisrael, Inami Mi Bavel La Eretz Yisrael, or a person from Bavel visits Eretz Yisrael, in all those cases we say that you have to follow both Minhagim, the Minhag of where you came from and the Minhag of where you're going to. Avol me'Eretz Yisrael leBavel, but here in Rav Bar Rav Chana's case, he's from Eretz Yisrael and he's visiting Bavel. So loy, no, then we don't say that he has to follow the local minhagim. Why not? Kiven da'anan kaifinen lahu, because we bnei Bavel are subject to them in Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, in other words, what happens? Rashi explains, in Eretz Yisrael at that point they still had smicha. In Bavel they didn't have smicha. So so a number of things come up from that. It means therefore that anytime there's a thing in Dinei Knossos, it can't be judged in Bavel. It can only be judged in Eretz Yisrael. It means that only in Eretz Yisrael can they be ma'aber shonim v'kaveya chadoshim, whereas in Bavel they can't. So in that sense, like we're secondary to them. We depend on them, on the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, to tell us in many cases what to do. So therefore they outrank us. Now, Tosfos does point out, also Tosfos says there's another point that Eretz Yisrael has an advantage over Bavel. First of all, Tosfos brings from a Gemara elsewhere that they teach Torah, they teach more Torah in public. So we have, there's a person from Malchus Beis David in charge in both in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel, but in Eretz Yisrael, they were the Nesiim, who are teaching Torah publicly. In Bavel, they were the Rosh HaGalusa, and as we talked about in the history lesson a few weeks back, the Rosh HaGalusa were not themselves always Talmidei Chachamim. So they had political power, they had police power and whatever, and in fact, that's the only advantage that Bnei Bavel had over Bnei Eretz Yisrael, is if the local Bote Dinim said, for example, that someone has to pay money, then the Reish Galusa could enforce that with his police. But other than that, in terms of Torah, they were much greater in Eretz Yisrael than in Bavel. Also, there's the point, Tosfos says, Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machim, the Chacham in Eretz Yisrael are so much wiser because the air of Eretz Yisrael makes them smarter. So for all those reasons, we're saying, therefore, that we, Bnei Bavel, are subject to them, and therefore they don't have to follow Arm and Hagim when they visit Bavel. So Eretz Yisrael above all, kiven dan nan kaifin lahu, since we are subject to them because we depend on them, therefore avdin and kabasaihu, we do like them. Actually, Tosfos says, strictly speaking, the word over here should really be they are allowed to do not like us. Tosfos says what it is there's a Gemara in Chulin which talks about a similar concept. There's a Gemara in Chulin where you have a similar case over there about somebody visiting from one place to another and following his own minhagim, rather than the local minhagim, and there it's actually talking about doing something. There it's actually talking about doing something like that you have over there. That when Reb Zera moved from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and he ate something which according to Rav or Shmuel would be usher, it was shechted improperly. And we say over there, Avdin and Kavasaya, we Bnei Bava, when we move to Eretz Yisrael, are allowed to follow their ways of doing things, because again, we're subject to them. So therefore, in Or Gemara, it borrows that expression, even though in Or Gemara really it should be the other way, when they don't have to follow us. Because he was saying, Rav Bar Rav Chana from Eretz Yisrael doesn't have to follow Or Minhagim above it. Right, here we're talking in Bavel, that Gemara in Cholin is talking about that Reb Zera went to Eretz Yisrael and ate it, and there the expression of Dinin Kavasayahu is exact. It means we, Bnei Bavel, moving to Eretz Yisrael, are allowed to follow the Menhagim of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, the Gemara uses the same expression over here, even though over here it's a little bit, even though it doesn't fit quite right. Okay. Rav Ashi gives a different answer. Afilu Tema Me'Eretz Yisrael LeBavel. No, you could even say that when a person is traveling from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, he has to follow the local menhagim. The difference is Hani Mili Heichad Ein Daiti Lachser. That would only be where he's not planning to move back. He's planning to move back. So therefore, he's not required to keep the local menhagim as long as he's there. So again, Tosfos earlier on the Amud discusses. I mean, if we said that we said in the Mishnah that you have to follow the local minhag and the minhag you came from, and if that's talking about where you're moving, then why should you have to? And there is also where you have that distinction between whether it's a minhag choshuv that was based on Tamar Chachamim versus where the Bnei Amadina came up with it on their own. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Omale Rav Babachana Livrei. Rav Babachana tells his son, as far as this fat on the straighter side of the keva, he says, Bni, loy toicha loy befanai, veloy shaloy befanai. Don't eat from that fat, whether in my presence or whether not. My presence could be literally when I'm around, or it could be as long as I'm alive. They're both like, why? Ani shere isi es Rabbi Yechanan she'ochal, because I saw Rabbi Yechanan eating it. Therefore, kedayu Rabbi Yechanan lismech olav b'fanav v'shalai b'fanav. Rabbi Yechanan is great enough that you can rely on him whether in his presence or whether not. Ata loira isa, he said, but you didn't see him. Therefore, lo teicha ben shalai b'fanai, so don't eat it whether I'm around or whether I'm not around. Okay, I mean, one possibility is it could be that the son had moved to Bavel, in which case then the local minhag is not to eat it. So Rabbi Bachana is telling him, I was able to eat it on the grounds of that I'm a Ben Eretz Yisrael, but even though you grew up in Eretz Yisrael, but now since you didn't actually see Rabbi Yechanan eating it, then maybe you can't be, because you actually have. I mean, you can always have with these kinds of things that you eat, that you think that something is mutter. And really, there's a slight change, and then it makes it also. So, like he's saying, in other words, when you see a great tzaddik like Rabbi Yechanan doing something, you can be sure Rabbi Yechanan is doing it in such a way that he's making sure nobody is going to misunderstand what he's doing. But not everybody is going to be of that caliber. So therefore, for another person, and actually, I think Rav Moshe talks about in one of his sfarim, he says that the vote is if Rabbi Bachana himself was able to think up good reasons, logical reasons, why it should be mutter, then fine, his son would be able to follow that. But since Rabbi Bachana himself doesn't know any reason why this fat should be mutter, the only reason he's eating it is because he has Maaser Rav that Rabbi Yechanan ate it, then therefore that's not a strong enough reason for his son afterwards to be able to eat it, unless he actually saw Rabbi Yechanan eating it, which he didn't. So the Gemara says, in which case, this that Rabbi Babachana is saying that you can't follow this Maaser Rav if you didn't see him doing it himself, that disagrees with another statement of Rabbi Babachana himself. Rabbi Yechon ben Elazar told me the following story. I one time followed Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Yossi ben Lakunya into a garden. This was during Shemitah. He took svichim of cabbage and ate them. Svichim is, in English, it's called aftergrowths. It means, in other words, when you have, like this you have, that often you'll have plants start growing from seeds that were dropped in previous years. Not every seed that's dropped starts growing. So sometimes, and during the year also, during the sixth year of the Marshall, you have the plants are producing seeds, and sometimes some of the seeds fall down onto the ground before you harvest them. So the next year, those sprout, and those start producing whatever plant it is. So one second. So actually what it is like this. Rashi says we're talking about that it was la'achar zman habir. That it was, you have, again, we talked about in the Mishnah, and we're going to talk about more extensively tomorrow, about the matter of beer, of Peiros Shavuos. There comes a point with most kinds of produce, when there's no more of it in the field, and then you have to get rid of any of it from your house, be mafkir according to Tosfos, actually destroyed according to the Rambam. Yeah, well, eat it or destroy it, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, so Rashi says this was la'achar zman habir, but you have these cabbages that are growing over there, and still the ochal. So Rav Shim ben Yosef ben Lakunya ate it. The nosanli, and he gave it to me. He gave it to me, Rabbi Yechon ben Elazar. And he says to me, Bni, befonai echel, you can eat it in my presence. Shaloi befonai lo techel, don't eat it not in my presence. Because, again, ani shereisi es Rav Shim ben Yechoi shachal, I saw Rav Shim ben Yechoi eating such things. Therefore, kedai Rav Shim ben Yechoi lismechalav befonav shaloi befonav. Rav Shim ben Yechoi is great enough that, again, we can be sure he did it in a way that, you know, in a careful way to make sure that everybody understands that anybody who sees him will understand that he's doing it in a way that's mutar api halacha. So therefore, I could rely on him whether he's present or not. Ata, but you didn't see Rav Shimon do that. Therefore, b'fanai echel shalai b'fanai loy teichel. So only eat it in my presence, but not when I'm not in my presence. Which again, in my presence and not in my presence could mean literally when I'm standing here versus not, or it could mean, I think the Meiri explains that it means while I'm alive or after I pass away. Because while I'm alive, you could ask me to clarify, whereas after I pass away, you can't. So we see that here Rav Baba Chana is reporting this story also, and here Rav Shimon ben Yosef ben Lakunya is saying that it's fine to be soimach on this befonai, just not shaloi befonai, whereas in the previous one with the fat, he was saying that both, whether befonai or shaloi befonai, you shouldn't eat it. Okay, so it's a contradiction. The Gemara doesn't address further how we reconcile that contradiction. Maybe, okay, Rav Baba Chana himself maybe held different opinions about it at different times in his life, or maybe you could distinguish somehow between chelev and then sviche shvius. Anyway, again, Rashi explains that we're talking about over here, that we're talking about after zman habir. Tosfos has a long discussion about it and says that no, what we're talking about is like this. Mida raisa, you're allowed to eat any svichim. All of these aftergrowths, all of these things that grew on their own, you're allowed to eat during Shemitah. You treat them like any other peder shvius. The Chachamim made a gzera on svichim, because the problem is sometimes you have people that actually go and plant it, and then when it grows, oh, I didn't know that was going to grow. I didn't plant that. It fell from last year's seeds. So therefore, the Chacham made a gzeira not to eat svichim at all. So now, then, we're talking about over here. So there's these svichim. On the other hand, here we're talking about cabbage. So one possibility. Rashi mentions over here that one possibility is that the root of the cabbage is always there in the ground, that it never completely goes away. So therefore, there's never, the whole point of beer is kol alachayim in asada, once it's gone from the fields and there's nothing more available for the wild animals, then kali lebehemtacham in abayis, then you have to get rid of whatever's in your house. Well, if cabbage is never, if you always have the root of the cabbage is still always in the ground, then it's never kol alachayim in asada. So therefore, that might be a reason to be matir it. Whereas the Chachamim would disagree and say that cabbage is just like every other plant in that regard. Rashi also mentions an explanation that maybe the svichim we're talking about over here is, svichim is usually something that grows directly from the ground. Here, what we can be talking about is you still have the stalk of the cabbage is left and you have new leaves growing on it. Rashi says, I don't like that explanation because that's not called svichim at all. That would be more like a tree producing new branches or new fruit. And that's not even, and there's no particular issur on that. So Rashi prefers the explanation that what it is that cabbage, the root is always present in the ground, therefore it's not really like it ever disappears, therefore there's no time for beer for it, according to Rav Shimon, whereas the Chacham would say there still has to be a time of beer for it. There's a number of other possibilities. Rabbeinu Nissim talks about this, one of them being, and Tosfos brings it over here, that we're talking of that we're talking about that it was actually in they grew during Shemitah and now is already the eighth year. So one way of looking at it is then that we should say they should be also just like any other svichei shvius. The other way of looking at it, though, is cabbage grows very fast. So therefore, when people see you eating it, they're not going to think that you're eating svichei shvius. They're going to think this grew in the eighth year. So that might be a reason to be matir it. So again, Rav Shim ben Yochai would allow it, but the other Chachamim would not. They had to eat something, but what it is mainly they ate things that were stored up from the sixth year, or they could buy from goat. No, if it grew in the sixth year, then it's regular. It's not paid as 3 years. Also, Maybe, maybe not, but okay, maybe, I don't know. Yeah, but I mean, there's other things also. Again, you're allowed to eat, you know, when we're saying you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to eat svichim, that applies to like grain and vegetables and whatnot. You're still allowed to eat fruits that grow during Shemitah. You just have to eat them with Kedushas Shavuos. So you have those to eat. Means you have all the dinim of Shemitah on them. You can't, you can sell it in very small quantities, whatever, but you can't sell it to make to do business. You, things that are meant for people to eat, you can't give to animals to eat and so forth. You can't throw, if the peels are edible, you can't throw them away. You have to, right away, you have to let them rot first. And then, you know, there's all kinds of dinim with it. Yeah. In various places, there is a masechta of Mishnayos, masechta Shavuos, that talks about these dinim. There's no Gemara Bavli on it, so there's Yerushalmi on it. But in the Bavli, the dinim of Shemitah are scattered all over Shas. There's one big sugya about it in masechta Sukkah, for example. So Be'ez Hashem, we'll get to that eventually, and then talk about some of those dinim. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so my Reb Shimon, where do we see Reb Shimon talking about this? So the Tanya, Reb Shimon, Mekol HaSfichim Asurim, Chutz MeSfichei Kruv. Reb Shimon says all Sfichim are also doing Shvius. Again, Rashi says we're talking about after the time of Biur. Rashi says we're talking about after the time of Biur. Tosfos says we're talking about even before Biur, just because of the fact that they were Sfichim and they're also Medirabanan. Chutz MeSfichei Kruv, except for Sfichim of cabbage. She'en Kayotz Behen B'Yerek HaSoda, because there's nothing else like them among vegetables in the field, which means, so Rashi has two explanations again. One is his Rebbeim's explanation, that it means that the leaves over here grow from the stalk, so therefore it's like a tree that grows new branches, so therefore it's not considered Sfichim, as opposed to a regular Sfiach is when you have seeds that fell on the ground, or that got knocked out of the plants and fell on the ground, and now they're growing this year. And then Rashi says that then in that case it wouldn't be called Sfichim at all. And also, after all, okay, so you're saying that you'd be mutter to eat them, but so what? You still have the dinim of beer when it comes to fruit from trees, you still have the dinim of beer. So Rashi says the better explanation is, again, that cabbage is never kol alachaya, it never disappears completely from the fields. Although even that, Rashi says gimgum, it's still like it's a little hard to understand that, maybe because if all you have left is the underground stalk, is that really considered that it's available for the chaya? Okay, anyway, so Shimon says that svichei kruv on mutter, but chamim kol asvichim asurin, whereas the chamim say no, all svichim are also. And v'tavayu al libedi Rabbi Akiva, both of them are going according to the opinion, both of them are within the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says that people are going to wonder, what are we going to do during Shemitah? We're not going to be planting, we're not going to be gathering in our harvest. Why does the Pasuk need to mention planting and harvesting? Obviously, if you don't plant anything, there's nothing to harvest. From here we learn that Sfichim are Osir. So again, according to Rashi, what we mean is, so it means after the time of Biur. So it means, in other words, we're not allowed to plant. Even if something grows, there comes a point after the time of Biur when we can't eat it. So what are we going to do? According to Tosfos, the vote is you were not allowed to plant. And even if something grows on its own, we're not allowed to eat it. Now that's mainly, the din of Sfichim is mainly a Gzeido Dirabbanon, in which case it would be an Asmachta. So now with my komitzagi. So now the machlokas Reb Shimon and the Chachamim is like this: Rabbanan sabri gazrin and svichei kruv otor shav svichei d'alma. The Chachamim say we make a gzera because svichei kruv may be confused with other kinds of svichim. So even though it's true that kruv in and of itself shouldn't have beer, because after all it continues to exist in the ground all winter long, nevertheless the svichim of it would be osur. Otherwise, people are going to think that that svichim in general are mutter. Reb Shimon Sover, like as we in svichei kruv at the svichei d'alma, whereas Reb Shimon says we don't make such a gzera, and therefore since kruv itself continues to exist throughout the winter, then you don't have a problem with it. Kruv is cabbage. Yeah. Okay, so Okay, all right. Okay, the Mishnah had said, let's continue. The Mishnah had said, "Aholich mimakom b'chula." If a person is going from a place, so we said, if a person is going from a place where they have the minhag to do malacha on the morning of Erev Pesach, or vice versa. So what do we say in the Mishnah? If he goes from a place where they do malacha to a place where they don't, or a place where they don't do malacha to a place that they do, then we said he has to follow the chumras of where he came from and the chumras of where he went to. And the Mishnah continues, "Val yishana odim epnei machloikas." A person shouldn't do any differently than local minhag because of machloikas. So now let's figure out. I understand when you're talking about a person is going from a place where they do malacha on Erev Pesach morning to a place where they don't. So we say, we apply to him the chumras of where he went to, and therefore it means va'al yishana adam epnei machlokas. He shouldn't do differently because of machlokas, because if he does work over there on Erev Pesach morning, that's going to cause machlokas, because people are going to say, what do you mean? You're not allowed to do that. Or local minigas, you're not allowed to. And v'loy la'evid. So therefore, v'loy la'evid. So therefore, the bottom line is he's not doing work. But what do you mean? If we're saying that if he's going from a place where his local minhag, where in his hometown, is not to do malacha, he's going to a place where they do malacha on the morning of Erev Pesach. What do you mean? Al yishana adam epnei machlokas. What do you mean? He shouldn't do differently than regular people because of machlokas. Does that mean v'nevid? He should be doing work on Erev Pesach morning in this place where he's visiting. We just said in the Mishnah earlier that you have to go according to the chumras of both places. So it should come out that either way he's not allowed to work. So the question is, if he's in a place where the local minhag is to do work at a Pesach morning, then how can he not do work? Because that's his minhag, because that's the minhag of where he came from. Isn't that Mishana? And it's going to cause machlokas. Everybody's going to say, what are you not working? What do you think? It's not allowed to work in the morning of Erev Pesach. You're allowed to. Amar Abaya Aresha. So one second. Abaya says no. When it says Al Yishana Onim, now Machlokas is referring back to the Resha. It's saying, in other words, that even though your local hometown minhag is that you could be doing malacha Erev Pesach morning, but don't when you're in a place where the minhag is not to, mipnei machlokas. But you're right, the other way around, you would also not have to work. There, we're not worried about machlokas, and because you still have to go according to the minhag amokim you came from. Rava Amala Olama Sefer. Rava says it is actually referring to the Sefer. What it means is, Vahachikama, Ein Bazum Ipne Shinya Machlokas. Not working on Erev Pesach morning when everybody else in the place where you're visiting does work is not considered a problem, is not considered a difference that's going to bring to Machlokas. Because Maika Amat Haroya Ima Malacha Asura, what are you concerned about? Somebody is going to see that he's not doing Malacha and think that it is actually Asur, when really in this place the minhag is to say that it's Mutter. No problem. Like you said, Meimar Amri, Kamatloni, Havi Bashuka. People are going to say there are a lot of people out of work. Yeah, you always have people who are. Yeah, you always have batlonim who are not working. So therefore, people are not going to think that this shows that he's doing it because Davka, he holds it Asur. Okay, it so happens he doesn't have anything to do. He doesn't have anything to do this morning. But therefore we would say that in that case also you have to follow the minhag of where you came from and not work, even though the people over here do in fact do work. Okay, and we'll continue on that topic tomorrow, Bez Hashem.